welcome to the Voice of Dr. Ye. I'm your host, Dr. Demon Ye. In this episode, we bring one guest who you may be familiar with if you read like articles from New York Post or you have listened to the very early beginning back to mid-2022 when I started this, the Voice of Dr. Ye broadcast. He was one of my first guest at that time. His name is Steve W. Mosher. And Steve Mosher is an internationally recognized authority on China and the population issues, as well as an acclaimed author speaker. He is the founder and president of Population Research Institute in U.S. He has worked tirelessly since 1979 to fight coercive population control programs and has helped hundreds of thousands of women and families worldwide over the years. In 1979, Stephen was the first American social scientist to visit mainland China. He was invited there by the Chinese government, where he had access to government documents and actually witnessed women being forced to have abortions under the new one-child policy. Mr. Mosher was a pro-choice assessist at that time, but witnessing these traumatic abortions led him to reconsider his convictions and to eventually become a practicing pro-life Roman Catholic. Steve has appeared numerous times before Congress as an expert in world population, China, and human rights abuses. He was also made TV appearance on Good Morning America, 60 Minutes, The Today Show, 2020, Fox and CNN News, as well as being a regular guest on talk radio shows across the nation. He is also the author of the best-selling A Mother's Ordeal, One Woman's Fight Against China's One-Child Policy. Other books including Hegemon, China's Plan to Dominate Asia and the World, China Attacks, China Misperceived American Illusions and the Chinese Reality, Journey to the Forbidden China, and Broken Earth, The Rural Chinese. Actually, he has a new book recently on Amazon, which we will talk about it soon. So, sir, you have also been the journalist that appears in Wall Street Journal, Reader's Digest, the New Public, the Washington Post, the National Review, Reasons, Asian Wall Street Journal, Freedom Review, and the New York Post, all like this. And first, welcome you go back to my broadcast. And I really want you to let our audience to know or remind why your experience and insights are so special and your understanding of China could be so deep, far above most of American China experts on China, on the nature of the communist China, and why you can be the first social scientist who went to China, and what happened after that, you said you converted. Could you let our people know these interesting stories in your life? Thank you.
Well, before I talk about me and my experience, I want to talk about you and your experience, because you are one of my heroes, Dr. Yen. You are a truth teller. And I think Americans would be surprised at how few truth tellers there really are in the world. There are very few people who are willing to sacrifice their career, willing to sacrifice their future for the sake of pursuing and telling and being a witness to the truth. And you, at great personal cost and great personal danger, came from China, the occupied part of China called Hong Kong, occupied now by the Chinese Communist Party, to the United States to tell the truth about the origins of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. And all Americans should be grateful to you, and all Americans should be tuning into your show if they want to find out what's really happening on the other side of the world in China, because you know China, having from the inside out, you know it from having grown up in China under the misrule of the Chinese Communist Party. So people should listen to you. You are a voice of truth, a voice of reason, and we'd be better off for having listened to you and followed what you say. So I have great admiration for you, Dr. Yen.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate.
So back to my story. Well, I was a young naval officer a long time ago, stationed in Japan, and I became fascinated with the Orient. I learned Japanese. I resigned my commission in the Navy and went to the Chinese University of Hong Kong. I completed the Chinese language course there. I learned Mandarin in school, and I learned Cantonese on the streets. So, So I came back to the United States and went to Stanford University on a National Science Foundation fellowship. And when we normalized, the United States normalized diplomatic relations with China on January 15th of 1979. I was in China by March of 1979 because people in the China field thought, here's someone who can speak, read and write Chinese, and we should send him. So I was picked as a very junior scholar to go to China. Now, the Chinese Communist Party did not like the idea of my being in China, and they initially turned down my research. They said, we want America to send nuclear physicists and chemical engineers, and we will even tolerate historians and linguists, but we don't want a curious social scientist wandering around the country talking to the people of China. So they turned down my research. It was only after former President Jimmy Carter had a meeting with Deng Xiaoping, and he brought up my research, and he said, would it be all right if this American scholar, Stephen Mosier, came to China? And Deng Xiaoping said, it won't be a problem. Meiyou wenti. And after Deng Xiaoping said, it won't be a problem, it wasn't a problem. All barriers disappeared. I went and lived in the Pearl River Delta in a commune called Junan Commune, which is a perfect name for a commune because it's equality commune, right? Junan, and equality peace. So I lived there for a year. I did not have anyone from the Communist Party watching me. I was able to talk freely with the people. And they told me some amazing things. They told me that as soon as the Red Army had arrived in the village in 1950, they had taken out the members of the Nationalist Party and the old village leaders to a local hill called Xiaoguishan, Little Turtle Mountain, and shot them. Execution. The second thing they did was they executed anyone found with a weapon. So if you had a rifle or a gun, you were shot by the People's Liberation Army. They took me out to a field outside the village, a mass grave, where 200 people were buried. Those were the people who died during the famine after the Great Leap Forward from 1960 to 1962. They told me about cannibalism during the Cultural Revolution, the eating of human flesh, caused again by the rampaging Red Guards. They told me about all the purges and persecutions over the years. And they told me something really astonishing. They told me that life had been better in 1949, before the communists came, than it was in 1979 and 1980. In other words, they said there's been virtually no progress in the last 30 years. We're worse off in many ways than we were before, because before we had our own land. Some people owned a little more. They were called landlords or rich peasants. But now we are all slaves of the big landlord, Da Diju. And of course, that's the worst thing you can say about someone, right? In communist China, that he was a landlord. My goodness, he was exploiting the masses. Well, the people of the village, the commune I was living in, called the Communist Party the big landlord. Which is all you need to know about their view of the Chinese Communist Party. And then, Dr. Yen, the one-child policy began. And I knew about the policy as soon as it hit my commune, because the local village party secretary, who was a friend of mine, came over the day he received the directive from the Central Committee of the Guangdong Provincial Communist Party. And the directive said that, that there were too many people in Guangdong province being born, and that the local officials were to ensure that the population of Guangdong did not increase by more than 1% in the year 1980. Now, this was March of 1980. So I looked at Secretary He and I said, you know it takes 9 months to conceive and bear a child. He said, yes. I said, so if you're starting a campaign to keep the birth rate down now, you're going to be forcing women, you're going to have to be forcing women to get abortions. And he said, oh, yes. He said, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to do house-to-house search of the commune and identify all the women who are pregnant with second and third and fourth children. And we're going to tell them they must get an abortion. We're going to tell them that, that their children, their unborn children, are a danger to the future of China. That we're going to tell them that if they want a great China, if they want China to prosper and development, that for the good of the country, for the good of the party, for the good of the commune, they must sacrifice their children. And that's exactly what they did. They arrested 18 women in my village who refused to get abortions. They took them to the local commune headquarters and locked them up for days or weeks, however long it took to force them to get an abortion. And then at the end of the day, they took them all one by one to the local medical clinic, which for a couple of months was doing nothing but doing abortions and sterilizations. They stopped treating other diseases because the small clinic was filled. Every bed was filled with a young woman, usually in their early 20s, 21, 22, 23, 25, who had been given lethal injections into the womb to kill their unborn children. Most of these women were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 months pregnant. And then the operating room was busy from morning to night with doctors doing cesarean section abortions. They were performing cesarean sections, opening up these young women like tin cans, opening them up and then removing the now dead and dying babies. Well, I was there in the lockup when these women were told they had no choice, they had to get an abortion. I was there when they were crying and sobbing over the loss of their child. I was there in the clinic when they were being given the lethal injections, and the death watch was 24 to 48 hours before their unborn child would die from the poison. And I was in the operating room when they were being given cesarean section abortions. And so I saw with my own eyes what the abortion of an 8 and 9 month unborn child looks like. This was pure evil. But the Communist Party thrives on evil. It really feeds on evil. I think the basis, the basic animating principle of communism, certainly of Marx and Lenin, was hatred of God. And underneath all of their economic pretensions and their political claims and so forth is a hatred of the good, the true, and the beautiful, a hatred of God. And it feeds on, the system feeds on evil. It always has to have a target. It always has to have an enemy, because that's the way it maintains the muscular tone of the system. That's the way you keep the system tuned, like you keep an engine tuned to run properly, right? You have to constantly feed victims into the system in order to keep the system working at top efficiency. So there's always a target. And in the early days, it was the landlords or the capitalists. And later on, it was the reactionaries. It was the rightists in 57, 58. And in the commune system, it was anyone who objected to being forced into a commune and having their land taken away from them. After that, the Cultural Revolution, it was anyone, you know, the four olds, anyone who had foreign contacts, anyone who had an education, anyone in a position of authority who opposed Chairman Mao. But then the biggest target group of all, Dr. Yan, were the unborn. Because while these other campaigns had killed millions, or maybe 10 million or 20 million, the one-child policy killed, according to the Chinese Communist Party, 400 million. So the unborn, from 1980, when I was in China, to 2016, were the target of the communist killing machine. and they were killed in huge numbers. And I make the point that in the book, The Devil in Communist China, that if you include all of the people killed during the Chinese Civil War, all of the people killed during the famines and the purges and persecutions and the Cultural Revolution, it probably comes up to 100 million. And then to add to that, the 400 million unborn children who were killed, many late in pregnancy, some at birth with lethal injections. That's a death toll caused by the Chinese Communist Party of 500 million. That's a truly astonishing, it's a truly horrible, barbaric, ghastly number. That's why I call the Chairman Mao the killingest man in human history, because he killed more human beings than any other. And the Chinese Communist Party, the biggest killing machine in human history. It feeds on death and destruction.
Into this abortion policy in China to see how people suffer from them. You know so much, you understand their language, you can communicate with them. Why would China allow you to do that? And if not, what is their, Chinese government's attitude towards you?
Well, why would the Chinese government choose to embark on the one-child policy? Well, there was, beginning in the late 1960s in the West, this huge propaganda campaign about overpopulation. There were books published by people like Paul Ehrlich, my former colleague at Stanford University, called The Population Bomb, in which he said we were having so many babies, we were breeding ourselves off the planet, and that by the 1970s, hundreds of millions of people were going to starve to death in massive famines because we couldn't afford to feed them all. Well, it was in the late 1970s, after the death of Chairman Mao, that China opened up to the West. And for the first time, Chinese scholars were allowed to travel to the West, to the United States, to Europe. And one of them, a rocket engineer named Song Jian, came back with a copy of The Population Bomb, with a copy of a book called The Limits to Growth, which argued that Western countries, in order to stop environmental and economic collapse, had to stop population growth. And he went to Deng Xiaoping. He had very good connections with the top leadership because he'd helped design ICBMs. And he said, you know, the West is embarking on population control because we're going to run out of resources by the 1990s. Here's the latest study. And he showed him The Limits to Growth, which turned out to be a fraud. But Deng Xiaoping said yes, apparently the West is going to be controlling its population. We need to control our population. And they decided that the ideal population of China would be 600 million. And they needed to stop population growth. And so Deng Xiaoping said to engineer Song Jian, how do we get there? And he said, well, I think we need to have a one-child policy. And so the old men who ruled China, Deng Xiaoping and his colleagues, decided that they were going to limit everyone to one child based on this false myth of overpopulation propagated by the West. So that's the origin of the one-child policy. The result, of course, was not only morally bankrupt, the result was not only the death of 400 million unborn children, the result was not only the highest suicide rate in the world among Chinese women who were mourning the loss of their children, the result was not only the destruction of families and the tearing apart of social society, the result is now clear, is going to be economically devastating, because China, because of the misguided, wrong-headed, mistaken one-child policy, is now in absolute demographic decline. It is filling more coffins than cradles each year in the country. There are more people dying in China than are being born. And it's very difficult to see how the Communist Party will ever turn this around, because for 40 years, they've been telling people in China, for the good of China, for the good of the party, for the good of the country, for the good of China's future, for economic development, you must limit yourself to one child. And now, having done that for 40 years, we have young Chinese who aren't interested in getting married, aren't interested in having children. And so what is the Communist Party going to do? Well, I'm afraid that the Communist Party will do exactly what it did in 1980, only in reverse, Dr. Yen. Instead of ordering young people, instead of arresting young women for the crime of being pregnant, instead of arresting young women for the crime of being pregnant, they're going to tell young women they must get pregnant. I'm afraid what we will see is forced pregnancy in China before too long.
Oh, sorry, Ron, I gave up. I mean, very good topics, so we may not have enough time to discuss it further in this episode. But yes, you know, when you talk about one child policy, since you came to China, that's even before I was born. And then it lasted until very recent years. Basically, at the beginning of 2019, I think people just started to get used to the new policy that, oh, you could have second baby. And then soon, now, it comes to three babies. So what it means, it doesn't mean you have freedom of your own baby numbers in China. It means that previously only one is allowed. And then in the around 2016 to 2020, that you are allowed to have two and encourage you to have two. Now three, but they didn't mention over 3 years. So still you need to think about if you have over three, that could be illegal and you need to pay the fines. And also people really are talking about to punish those who don't want the kids. And I mean, all these things, if the government wants, they can control all the women. Now what they are worried about is they know that they realize young generation also understand the poor economy and China going down. And the Chinese Communist Party is so corrupted, people are struggling to life. These are all described in your new article on New York Post, that they don't find a job, they can't make a good living. So people don't want to get married and have a baby because the cost is so expensive in China, much higher than they can they need to spend in the United States even. So government started to launch a lot of policy propaganda, try to intimidate people if they don't want to get married or get a baby, and try to force them to do it, especially in the, we call the system. That means people who work for the government, in the government-related system, public school, public hospital, these staffs, they get more pressure because if you don't do that, they would give you trouble and you may lose your job and you may lose your retired salary. So, sir, you gave a very good question. And we want to discuss about your new article, Communist China Had a Good Run, But the Party is Over. And that was published on New York Post basically at the end of March, but it really attract so much attention. I see a lot of comments, shares about this article because you linked Mao Zedong, the huge killer, serial killer in human history, top one, to Xi Jinping. Actually, he's also one of the top killers. Just think about COVID-19. I mean, all over the world, according to some data, that 20 million people died. So we really don't know who will be the top one serial killer until the end of Xi Jinping's regime. But we all know that there are a lot of similarity and you pointed it out. So we are going to talk about this section after a short break in the next section. But anyway, before that, let me give people one more example of the one child policy and forced abortion. My mom told me, I'm the only child at home, the first and the only. My mom said the night she gave birth of me in a big public hospital in my hometown, Qingdao, there were another two ladies, also 20s, in the same ward. They all want to deliver the baby at the same night. However, they delivered the two, I mean, each of them delivered one baby in front of me, but I'm the only survived kid among three because one lady, she had one kid already. So it's illegal to have the second one. Another lady didn't get married. So she was illegal to have any baby.
Yes.
And my mom was forced to say both babies were killed in front of them, that the babies were alive, but after they get out, because they are too big to get surgery for mom, after they were born, alive babies were injected with some poison to the top of the head.
And exactly.
Killed. You know that, right? They are killed immediately.
Absolutely. Here's what happens. If a woman in China under the one-child policy was going into labor and she went to the hospital and the hospital discovered that the baby was illegal because she didn't have a permission slip to give birth, the doctors were under orders to kill the baby at birth. And so they would wait until the baby was born or the baby's head was coming out, and then they would give a lethal injection, sometimes of alcohol, sometimes of formaldehyde, into the fontanelle, the soft spot at the top of the baby's head, directly into the brain. And of course, the baby would die of convulsions within seconds or minutes. This is infanticide. This is what's happening all over China. And so what your mother witnessed was not an isolated case. Doctors were under orders not to allow illegal children to be born and to kill babies at birth. And sadly, you know, that's what happened again and again and again. I think over the course of many years, I think
yes,
millions of babies were probably killed in this way at birth. This is murder.
Yes, sir. So my mom was so scared, and she said her only idea at that time was, if they made mistake, thought I'm illegal, then I will be killed too. And luckily, they didn't make mistake. But my mom said, those doctor and nurse, when they kill the baby, it's very routine practical for them. It's like they are used to that very well. And when they turn to my mom, they're still the nice doctor, nice nurse, said, oh, don't worry, assure mom, not be nervous, and hey, see, you have a nice kid. So this kind of things, I mean, this is a very psycho picture if you imagine it, but this is how communist China pushed people to get into such psycho status. You killed babies 10 seconds before and then turn to the next lady and said, you are nice, you are great, oh, you will have a new kid. I can't always think about that. This is so terrible. So, sir, let's have a short rest and we will go back, continue the discussion. Thank you.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The buildup of spike proteins is dangerous to your health. Global Healing's Foreign Protein Cleanse detoxes your body, removing the spike proteins, allowing your body to repair from within. Formulated by Dr. Edward Group and by Dr. Brian Artis, Foreign Protein Cleanse targets and detoxes spike proteins in the body. Go to americaoutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to americaoutloud.shop. That's americaoutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX. Because it works.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Joint Health and Mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar, which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products, toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
A less suppression of truth in a world of darkness, void of any soul, requires that we are rightly informed, properly equipped, and strongly motivated to fight the corruption. AmericaOutloud.news is that place to awaken your heart, soul, and mind to the outloud truth. Now is our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
I'm so happy to talk with my guest, Mr. Stephen Mosher, who is a very excellent and special China expert because he had so much firsthand information and experience in China since 1971. The first social scientist from America came to China, and he has witnessed a lot of cruel facts happen in China at that time because it was the beginning of China's one-child policy. So, of course, later China government chased him out of China, and China government doesn't like Mosher's study because he's not the person always tell people the positive things. Instead, he revealed a lot of dark but real situation and facts happened in China, which is, for CCP, that is not acceptable, because you should help China to promote the propaganda. That's the reason China allow you to go there. If you go there and tell people the truth, how could China keep changing the world? How could China pretend to be your friend? And how could they turn Americans the panda huggers? So truth always truth, and Chinese governments, this kind of hypocrisy can be revealed. So now we know more and more Americans, especially after the pandemic, they realize China treat America as the top enemy and try all the best to kill Americans. And so it's not surprise when you heard about these bad things happened in China. And Steve Mercer just recently published a new book to tell you more and more you need to know. There are a lot of things, even though Americans start to focus on China, but it's so difficult for them to even image. And here, I just want to first cite an article which is published on 30 March on New York Post. And this article attract a lot of attention. And Mosher wrote this one, and based on the contents he has written in the new book. So this article, Communist China Had a Good Run, But the Party is Over. I like several sections when Mosher wrote inside. So Mr. Mosher said, He called all this kind of statistic data from China official government, like the young people's unemployment rate or the other economic rate, this kind of number. He said, CCP toys with statistics. The real numbers must be much, much worse. This is a really like this conclusion, because as people ask me how many Chinese died in COVID-19 in Wuhan, I said, we don't know. And they said, only 4,000, right, or 5,000, according to the official data. I said, if you listen to CCP statistic data, then basically, I mean, you are just a kindergarten kid in their eyes, because our statistic bureau, the only job is to make up data to fulfill CCP's all the propaganda and falsified narratives. Another thing in this article is, amazingly, they tell you that how Xi Jinping, when he got elected since 2012, he gradually put CCP's branches into all this civil, even little business to watch people, and we call them the government's CCP's ears and eyes, and then finally they managed to create the crimes to frame these owners, civil owners. So slowly, these party branches, these people help the CCP government to bring the, I mean, these personal individuals' own wealth in their business to the government. And these business people, some of them just gone. Because why do they need, I mean, this is a word that I think I should really cite to people, because Mr. Stevens said, the best way to eliminate the capitalism is to eliminate the capitalists themselves. Wonderful, nailed it. And also, as people always ask me, how could China government treat their people like that? It's like Wuhan outbreak. Oh no, we don't believe China government dare to intentionally release the virus out of the lab. How come they kill their own people? And when I can tell them based on evidence, this is not just a spillover from the lab accident. The step the virus get out of the lab is intentional. So the outbreak in Wuhan was unexpected, but they didn't care. I mean, they let it go, cover up, and intentionally take the advantage of the high transmissibility of the virus and infect the whole world to cause the pandemic. People said, oh, but still, it's difficult for me to understand how could CCP or Xi Jinping kill their own citizens? So you really need to read Mr. Moshe's work. Like in this article at the end, he cited the word from Mao Zedong. He said, as tens of millions of his countrymen were starving to death in the early 60s, Mao simply shrugged, deaths have benefits. They fertilize the ground. You really should read this new book from Moshe's work, The Devil and the Communist China. I mean, this book is now available on Amazon, because he pound to pound explained a lot of things that with logics, with facts, with documents let you understand why this kind of things can happen, and the similarity between Xi Jinping and Mao Zedong, and why we facing such a horrible situation between the, I mean, almost World War III, or we should say already we have seen the unrestricted World War III launched by China against America. So, sir, now give you the time, please. Let our audience know more about your new book, what they can learn from that, and what do you think is the biggest knowledge gap for Americans if they want to understand the national security risk posed by communist China and Xi Jinping to America? What should they know? What can they get from your book? Thank you so much.
Well, you know, I wrote the book, Dr. Yan, because people need to understand the sheer evil that we are dealing with. In the person of Mao Zedong, in the person of Xi Jinping, and the evil is built into the very structure of the Chinese Communist Party, which, as I said, feeds on hate and destruction. And, you know, it is true that Americans, for a long time, have regard other people with goodwill and try to put the best interpretation on things. And of course, the Chinese Communist Party regards us, probably correctly, as innocent and naive and easily deceived. Well, the Chinese Communist Party is probably correct in that. We do try to be charitable towards others. We do try to help countries and peoples in distress, but we can be taken advantage of. And no political organization has taken advantage of America more than the Chinese Communist Party, which is the opposite of innocent and naive and easily deceived. The Chinese Communist Party is guilty of massive crimes against the people, the killing, the murder of hundreds of millions, a genocide against minorities, persecution of Christians, Falun Gong members, political dissidents of all stripes. And of course, they are masters of deception, as their founder, Chairman Mao, was a master of deception. Mao admitted as a young man that he was lawless and godless, Wu Fa Wu Tian, and he meant it. Of course, he acted his entire career as on those principles of being lawless and godless. And he also said as a young man something very interesting that I think a lot of Marxists share this view. And he said, there are other people and things in the world, but they're only there for my use. In other words, instead of recognizing the innate dignity and value of other human beings, he regarded other human beings as simply there for his own use, as if he were some kind of demigod regarding people nothing more than pieces on a chessboard to be moved around, manipulated, controlled, and used. And then when they were no longer of any use, he could throw them away. What does it matter if a third of the population dies? What does it matter if people die of famine? Their bodies will fertilize the soil. What an inhuman view of your fellow human beings, your fellow Chinese, to regard them as nothing more than human compost, as human fertilizer. And the other thing about Mao and on the deception front, which I think is certainly continued by Communist Party leaders today, is that he was a master of deceit and deception. And the odd thing is, if Mao could achieve an end by telling the truth to his subordinates, to his followers, or by lying to them to get them to do what he wanted, he preferred to lie to them. He preferred to deceive them because in deceiving them, he could count himself clever. So he never told the truth when a lie would suffice. So he was the very opposite of someone who told the truth. He gravitated naturally towards the lie. And of course, the whole communist system is built on a lie and a fantasy. And oddly enough, the Communist Party, as you know, Dr. Yen, better than I, admits that its history and its ideology is a lie. If you go back to 2013, the directive number, I think it was directive number 9 of 2013 of the Central Committee of the Chinese Communist Party, it says that an accurate account of the history of the Chinese Communist Party or an accurate account of the ideology of the Chinese Communist Party is a mortal danger to the continued rule of the Chinese Communist Party. Well, why would an accurate account of the ideology and history be a danger, a mortal peril to the continued rule of the Chinese Communist Party? Because the history and the ideology are both lies. They're both fabrications. The history is a fabrication, right? They cover up all the crimes of the Chinese Communist Party and claim successes that, in terms of development over the last few decades, really belong to the Chinese people. The Chinese Communist Party did not develop China in the 80s and 90s and the early years of this century. It was the hard work and enterprise of the Chinese people who developed it. The Communist Party has been hamstringing and hindering them and serving it as an obstacle the whole time. So the history is a lie, and the ideology is a complete fantasy, because we're never going to get to the point where everyone is equal. We're never going to get to the point where the government fades away. We're never going to get to the point where everyone works according to his ability and consumes according to his needs. That's all just a fantasy to deceive the masses into following lustful, power-hungry leaders like Mao Zedong and Xi Jinping. So that's why I wrote the book, The Devil and Communist China, because Americans who are naive and innocent and easily deceived need to know that China is, Chinese Communist Party is deceiving them, is taking advantage of their naivete and their innocence to steal our intellectual property, to pour spies and saboteurs across our southern border, to send fentanyl, wage chemical warfare on American young people, killing 100,000 young people a year and addicting millions of others and destroying families, is doing all of these things, is engaging in warfare against the United States to weaken us across all domains, except the kinetic. We're not firing bullets or missiles at each other, thank God, but we're being attacked in many different ways. We're being attacked in every way that the Chinese Communist Party can imagine attacking us. Confucius Institutes on our college campuses to propagandize our young people, for example, buying favors from politicians in Washington, D.C. with money and drugs and honeypots to compromise politicians and shift American policy in China's favor. So we're under assault. We've been under assault now for a long, long time. Post-COVID, as you mentioned, Dr. Yen, I think a lot of Americans are waking up to the danger that is China. And it can't come too soon. We're running out of time. We're running out of time.
Honeypot. Yeah, that's Vinny Xi's favorite. They want the honeypot to make Americans feel Xi Jinping is so sweet, CCP is so great, and anyone dare to tell the truth here, show the real number of who was a witness like you, definitely China would try the best to surprise or silence. And so it's very, difficult for people like you to spend whole life focusing on the evil regime and try to reveal all the things. And I know you have been suffering a lot from this kind of persecution from Stanford University where you were studying there, and China was angry about your studies. So later Stanford also punished you, according to them. And then also, during the COVID-19, when you interviewed me, you were one of the earliest reporters in U.S. who won't talk to me about the COVID-19 origin in middle 2020. And you told me that before that, your articles about the COVID-19 suspicion, the origin suspicion, the cover-up of China, you observed, you analyzed, kind of also suppressed by media. So, yeah. Sir, now we know, actually, yesterday, Dr. Anthony Fauci, he has lied, he has misled people, these kind of things, or announced by the Committee on Oversight and Accountability in U.S. Congress, and they said Dr. Fauci will testify at public hearing on June 3rd, and also the key takeaways from his previous transcribed interview, including that Dr. Fauci acknowledged that lab leak hypothesis is not a conspiracy theory. This comes nearly 4 years after he promoted the publication of the now infamous yeah. Proxima Origin paper and attempts to disprove the lab leak hypothesis. And also, he admitted the mandate vaccine policy in America was promoted from his position of power at White House could increase vaccine hesitancy in the future, and other things. He had involved which seriously harmed Americans and the world public health policies and harmed the people's trust to the government, to the expert in this field. So, sir, we now still have around 5 minutes before we finish this broadcast. Would you like to talk more based on this latest update about COVID-19 as well as other things about China and their proxies there, like this kind of agents or corrupted people working for China to undermine America.
Well, it's very interesting, Dr. Yan, to me that when I began to look at the history of pandemics, and I wrote a book about it, you know, it's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. I realized
I love that, that book. Everyone should read it.
So thank you for that endorsement. I hope they do. But the one of the points I make in the book is that the Chinese Communist Party has actually released through its actions and inactions four different viruses on the world. And what do I mean by that? Well, remember back, I remember because I got sick with it, the Asian flu in 1957 to 58 originated in China, but the Chinese Communist Party covered up the fact that there was an epidemic in China and allowed the Asian flu to spread throughout Asia and throughout the world, you know, killing over a million people. It did not do the responsible thing in telling the world that there was a dangerous new virus that had jumped from animal to human, and thus millions of people died. So the same thing happened in 67, 68, and 69 with what was called the Hong Kong flu. It didn't come from Hong Kong.
Yes.
It came from Guizhou province. And again, the Chinese Communist Party hid it and allowed it to spread around the world as if to say, if we have an epidemic, we're going to use it as a bioweapon and allow it to spread around the world and weaken everybody else. We are not going to suffer and die alone. We're going to ensure that other people suffer and die. Then again, in 2002, 2003, we had SARS-1. We narrowly escaped a pandemic then, and we were saved by Canadian intelligence, which intercepted transmissions in China about a dangerous new epidemic on the loose. And we pressured Beijing for news and information, and they finally admitted, yes, we have this problem with this SARS-1 virus. And it didn't spread, it was contained. But again, that's an episode which shows you the Chinese Communist Party would have been happy to allow this dangerous virus, SARS-1, to spread around the world and kill lots of people, especially Americans, and weaken us. And again, coronavirus, the same thing happened. They spread it deliberately around the world this time. So there's a long pattern of this kind of behavior on the part of the Chinese Communist Party, this lust for death and destruction, this desire to weaken the United States, which the Communist Party, from its inception, from its very beginning, has seen as its principal enemy that must be defeated. And Americans, you know, we generally have positive feelings towards the Chinese people, and we've always wanted to help the Chinese people. And the Chinese Communist Party has taken advantage of our naivete in that regard, and used it against us. And I'm very worried, Dr. Yan, I know you are too, about the upcoming World Health Organization treaty, because you and I both know that Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, the head of the World Health Organization, is a puppet of the Chinese Communist Party. And you and I both know that if the World Health Organization is given the authority to declare a pandemic and impose on the United States and other countries the same kind of restrictions on travel, on assembly, on association, on vaccination and so forth that we endured under COVID, that they will use that against us in the future. So we all have to be aware of the danger of that World Health Organization treaty that's under consideration, and I think is going to be finalized in the next few weeks unless we strongly oppose it.
Thank you, sir. I really agree with you that WHO is deeply controlled by Chinese Communist Party, and the United Nations is the same too, and also there are many other super nations infiltrated by CCP for over decades, because that is part of their unrestricted warfare. That is one of the basic methods in this strategy. And I will also further reveal more things, because we have sources told us that how this kind of dangerous and evil things worked in WHO and this kind of supranational organizations by CCP, and how people could be killed if they try to tell truth. And I can tell you, the sources told me that it's because I reviewed the WHO cover-up since 2022, and my Yen reports on COVID origin inspired them, and also it's so surprised that they say I am still survive. So this is something gives them confidence and really encourage them to deliver the information to be whistleblowers like me, to one has the world know the evil facts. And definitely we will have a lot of things to do, and a lot of things are already ongoing. And thank you, sir. So before we end off this episode, could you let our audience know where to get your new book?
Well, the new book is The Devil and Communist China. It will tell you everything you need to know to prepare for the challenge that America and the world faces from the Chinese Communist Party in the 21st century. It's available from Tan Books, the publisher, Tan, T-A-N-B-O-O-K-S, tanbooksoneword.com. You can get it if you want an autographed copy. I'll be happy to sign one. You can get one from me at pop.org, P-O-P.org, short for Population Research Institute. That's pop.org, P-O-P.org.
Oh, you can get it from Amazon. I already found the link. And maybe I think in the soon future, you could see it from the bookshop in America Out Loud Network.
Yes. Yes.
And the Voice of Dr. Yen every Saturday and Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on air on America Out Loud Radio Network, as well as iHeartRadio. And later you can listen to its various apps for free, including Pandora, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Thank you, sir, and thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Dr. Yen.